Good morning and welcome to everyone. As we've been talking about a little bit, today is Father's Day. And that's what we'll be talking about. I want to talk about courageous dads. And this is very much holding up an ideal. I like to speak about things that I feel God has taught me and I'm able to do. But this is one I feel like I'm very much learning. And some of the things I say I don't do perfectly or maybe even well. But I hope you can understand that. G. Brooke Adams was a man in the 1800s, a young man, and he kept a diary as he was growing up. And one day he wrote in his diary, "Went fishing with my father, the most glorious day of my life." And later on in his life, he continued to look back. He mentioned this day in his diary other times as he reflected on it and how much it meant to him and how that one day of fishing made a difference in his life. Brooke's father was Charles Francis Adams. He was the U.S. ambassador to Great Britain for the Lincoln administration, so he was a busy, important man. And someone thought to check his diary for that same day and see what he wrote. What he wrote in his diary was, "Went fishing with my son, a day wasted." He didn't realize how important it was, but it was. He didn't see that, but it affected his son's life for the rest of his life. And I'm sure that all of us dads can feel that. This was a day wasted. For whatever reason, it didn't go the way we planned, but just maybe that's the day. That was one of the most important to our children, or one child maybe. Dads are very important. Children of dads who are involved in their lives have a lower risk of emotional and behavior problems, neglect and abuse, injury, poor performance in school, jail time, alcohol and other substance abuse, criminal activity, suicide. Moms who have their husbands living with them have healthier pregnancies, healthier babies. There's all kinds of things. Dads make a difference. And I want to say now to you moms who are parenting without your husband for whatever reason, God bless you. It's difficult. But I think if you look at some of these statistics, young people who've had other male mentors in their life have been able to change these statistics. I would encourage you, if your husband, your dad, isn't there as he should be, find that person. God's a father to the fatherless, and I think godly men should also be a father to the fatherless. So that's an encouragement to each of us. Young men, whether you're married or not, dads, reach out, mentor those. So if involvement in our children's lives is so important, what does that say about me and how much time I spend with my children? Am I an absent dad anyway, even though I'm not divorced? I'm in my children's lives, but am I there enough? How much time do I spend at work or maybe at my hobbies or whatever it might be that might pull me away from my family? And what is this doing to my family? So if God calls us to be courageous dads, what is courage? Is it these acts of heroism, daring feats of bravery, rescuing our children from the jaws of death? That could happen, I suppose. I think much more of the time it's the mundane things. Changing diapers, listening to your toddler's never-ending story or your wife's. Getting up in the middle of the night. I know that when I hear a baby crying in the night, I kind of lie there and hope that Grace will go get the baby so I don't have to. Is that being a courageous dad? Is that sacrificing myself like I should be? Courageous dads sacrifice themselves for their families. And when we say yes to having a family, we need to say no to a lot of other good things. Paul said it this way, "But I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife, and his interests are divided." And you can interpret that a lot of different ways, and some people would say that Paul wasn't really encouraging of marriage. But I think one thing that is clear, however you interpret that, is when you choose to have a family, when you choose to get married, there are some very good things you have to decide to say no to. And unless you do that, your family is going to suffer, your marriage, your wife. Don't ever neglect your family for the sake of some ministry that's going to feed your ego. I love to travel. But if I traveled for work and ministry every time I could, my family would be neglected. So I need to be careful about that. Courageous dads serve their families. Matthew 20, verse 20. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came to Jesus with her sons, bowing down and making a request of him. And he said to her, "What do you wish?" And she said to him, "Command that in your kingdom these two sons of mine may sit one on your right and one on your left." And it seems like these two sons had been collaborating with their mom to get this request somehow. And jumping down to verse 24, the other disciples weren't too pleased about this. And hearing this, the ten became indignant with the two brothers. But Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them." In other words, it's this big hierarchy, and you enjoy the place you're in, and you take advantage of the powers that you get when you're there. "It is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." He said, even Jesus didn't come to be served. He could have demanded that. He would have had the right to. But we're to serve. We talk about headship, and the father is the head of his home, and submission and all of those things. But that doesn't mean it lording it over our families, but rather serving. It says to be a slave. So I'd like to hear from you. What are ways that you do, or you should, or that dads should serve their families? Specific ways. What does that look like in your life? What should it look like in your life? What did your dad do for you, for your family? That you appreciated. So we can say these lovely things about servant leadership and all of this, but if it doesn't ever, the rubber never meets the road, it doesn't help. It's no good. It's worse to say it and not do it than not say it at all.
Together to help do chores and work around the house, whatever it is, takes a lot of work to keep things, everything going. And you know, are we willing to wash the dishes or whatever it takes, you know, sweep the floors and do things, yeah, whatever it takes to get it done?
Mm-hmm. That's something I really appreciated about my dad. If the family was working together, he would take the most difficult or the least desirable job, and that blessed me. And it was, and it's a challenge to me, and I'm not sure if I'm doing as well as he did, but it's something we should be doing.
Striving for that. I'm not sure that I have always achieved it, but that's what my goal is, to invest in their lives.
Putting their interests ahead of our own, to give them the time they need and do what's best for them.
I think it's important that we work with our children, very good at delegating, but then they don't help, and that can create bitterness in the children's part. They feel like they do all the work, and Dad sits on his can and tells me what to do and how to do it, but it doesn't help me. And I think that's important.
Teach your children to work by leading by example instead of just delegating all the time. That's one that I still have a lot of room to grow in. Any more?
I think one way that I struggle with, and that is taking time to have my devotion, praying for our children, or
something that I think I struggle with, and it's so easy to get distracted and get caught up in our own little bubble, if you will, and not take the time that we should to make that happen.
Take the leadership, Bible study, prayer, all of that. Yeah. So yes, serving our families. You know, when I come home from work, I like to be able to sit down and relax a little bit. Well, you know, I deserve it, right? I was working hard all day. Well, what about Grace? You know, she's been working hard today too, so, you know, she'd be willing to help out. And, you know, we can piously go to the Genesis and, you know, she's to be my helper. And I think that's probably not quite fair to just to use that. We should be helping each other. We're to be serving. There's a lot the Bible says about serving. Last Sunday, we were looking at Ephesians 5, and we talked a little bit about this, but I think courageous dads submit to each other. And Ephesians 5:21, like the last half of the verse, says, be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. And then it goes straight into, in the next verse, wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. And while there is certainly that headship, I think there's a reason that Paul puts that subjection to each other right next to the headship subjection. And leaders need to be willing to submit to their followers in some ways, in their needs and their requests. If you look at Moses requested of God that he would repent of his anger and save the children of Israel. God said, I'm going to destroy these people. And Moses pled with him, and God listened to that request. God submitted to Moses in that situation. And it doesn't mean that we compromise or we give up the role that God has called us to, or that we somehow just be rolled over by wrongs. We don't compromise right and wrong issues, but sometimes we need to submit to each other. We need to listen to our children. We need to listen to our wife and realize that, you know, they have legitimate needs and requests, and sometimes, and especially because we're not perfect, we make mistakes, so we should be willing to listen. Courageous dads lead lives of integrity. And let's turn to Daniel chapter 6. I think this is a really, really important concept. I want to look at Daniel and Joseph briefly. And to me, they're really good pictures of lives of integrity. I'm going to start reading in Daniel 6, verse 1. It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they would be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to him, that the king might not suffer loss. So this is just my imagination, but it seems like these fellows were supposed to stamp out corruption. They were to keep him from money from getting away. He's over this giant realm, and there's lots of room for corruption. So these fellows were supposed to be accountable to the king and make sure that there was no loss. Then this Daniel began to distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. So Daniel, this life of integrity, the king is seeing this, and he's saying, this man has integrity. This man I can trust. He's doing the job that I've appointed him to do. Then the commissioners and satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs. But they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption. So again, my imagination that these other fellows were still rather corrupt, even though they were in charge of stamping out corruption. And they said, Daniel's the only man standing in the way of us getting what we want. So there's got to be a spot. What do they say? Everybody has a price. Godly people don't have a price. And they couldn't find it. inasmuch as he was faithful and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. There's two ways that we can sacrifice our integrity. One is negligence. We're just lazy and we don't do the work we're supposed to and things fall between the cracks. Or corruption, where we're actually actively making a choice to do the wrong thing. And he was diligent and he was honest. And they said, there is nothing we can find him. We can catch him on. Then these men said, we will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God. They said, this man is completely perfect integrity. And also in his religion. So if we can pit that against the rules, he's going to go with his beliefs. They understood him really, really well. Down to verse 10. Now, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, so they made this plan. We all know the story about if you worship anyone else, then you're in trouble. Daniel learned about this law, and he entered his house. Now, in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God as he had done previously. He knew that this was going to cost him his job, or worse, and he went ahead and did it anyway. Just 100% integrity. Can your family count on you to always do the right thing, even if it's going to hurt? Would your enemies have to admit that even though they hate you for whatever reason, you're always honest, you're always true, you're always going to do what you know to be right? There's nothing bad that they could accuse you of. Or do we tell little white lies, or we kind of manipulate the truth and spin it for our benefit, or fail to keep our commitments, or a little negligent? Which are we? Joseph. I don't think there's many examples in the Bible that are better examples of what we see in his life of integrity. Very early on, he told his dreams accurately to his brothers. Maybe that was unwise, but he told them accurately. And he went to seek his brothers as his dad told him to. It went longer and it was harder to find them than he expected. He kept on. His brothers sold him into Egypt. He faithfully served Potiphar. He came in as a young slave and worked his way up to being in charge of this wealthy, important man's entire household. He resisted repeated sexual temptation, and then he was lied about and suffered the consequences of that. Even in jail, he earned the trust of the jailer until he was in charge of the whole jail. That's probably the one that I struggle the most to understand. He was stuck in jail, and he was in charge, and he was going around, I don't know, giving these people their rations. He got to talk to other prisoners, apparently. That's incredible integrity that he could earn the trust of the jailer like that. And then he was exalted to be the vizier, the ruler over all of Egypt. He saved Egypt from famine, saved the lives of many, many people, saved the lives of his family. Just a beautiful example of perfect integrity. Not perfect, he was human, but just integrity, godly integrity. What else do courageous dads do? They lead by example. They don't say, do as I say, not as I do. They can say, follow me as I follow Christ. At our house, we have a rule that at the table, we're not supposed to take phone calls or you have screen time at all. But I find it easy to kind of make an exception for myself because this is important. I could just step away from the table like I'm supposed to do and like I tell everybody else to do, but what's important? What do we do? How about this? If your children grew up to be exactly like you, would you be pleased? That's a good question that tells us if we're leading by example. Courageous dads require excellence of themselves and their family. I think God's people should be known for excellence. Excellence comes from diligence and unselfishness, I think. Some of the key ingredients. And is that, are we leading by example? Are we diligent and unselfish? If we're diligent and unselfish in whatever we do will be excellent. And that's what we'll be known for. Courageous dads think long term. We live in a society that We got to have drive-through fast food, and we want results now, and businesses are judged by their last quarter financials and not much else. But courageous dads think long-term into the future. Godly legacy is a long game. In 1830, Sweden and France were at war. King of Sweden and Napoleon were fighting, and Sweden lost. One of the reasons that they lost was because their navy wasn't, they didn't have enough of boats. And so the king of Sweden got together this group of men and said, I want you to go and find a place that we can plant oak trees so we can have masts for our ships. We need to build a lot of ships. And so they searched all over Sweden and they found this little island of Visingsö. And they found three tall oak trees. Beautiful for masts. And they brought one back to the king and to the people in charge of the navy and said, how do you like this oak tree? And they were so impressed, they immediately sent people to plant oak trees on this island. And not only did they plant oak trees, they planted other species of trees in between, so it would force these oak trees to grow up instead of out to make perfect, tall, strong masts for their navy. Well, it turns out 150 years later, they didn't need masts. They were making ships out of iron and steel. And so to this day, the island of Visingsö is full of beautiful, tall oak trees. Can you imagine? It takes 150 years for a big, tall oak tree to grow. And the king of Sweden said, we're planning for that. We need those. How would your life be different if you were thinking like that? Instead of being upset that your children aren't growing and learning today and tomorrow and this year, how often have you thought what your family is going to look like in 150 years? I'll admit I haven't very often at all. And I think maybe some of our frustrations that our children aren't learning or whatever might go away. We thought more often about 150 years from now, instead of next week and next month and next year. Courageous dads discipline their children. And there's a lot we could say about this, but I think let's turn to Hebrews 12, verse 7. And let's learn a little bit about what God, how God disciplines us. That's what these verses talk about. Hebrews 12, 7, and we'll read down to verse 11. It is for discipline that you endure. If God deals with you as with sons, for what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we have had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them. But he disciplines us for our good, so that we may share his holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterward it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. We do our best. We discipline our children as it seems best to us. But is it always for our children's good? Is it so that they can be holy? Or is it because they've embarrassed us, or we're frustrated, or we can't take it anymore? We've all been there, haven't we? Let's do our best to move towards God's style of discipline. Courageous dads affirm their family. They show appreciation. They're thankful. And I talked a little bit a minute ago about excellence. Sometimes maybe I focus too much on requiring excellence and not enough on affirming. But I think one of the ways to get to excellence is affirming. So let's be encouraging. Wife, children, affirm them. Courageous dads protect their family. And you can talk about these, you know, stories where, you know, a dad saved his child from an alligator or whatever it might be. But mostly what we do is protect our families from evil. Maybe from evil influences, whatever that might look like. From evil people, whoever that might be. It takes discernment. It takes understanding. Help our children grow to be strong on their own and yet still protect them. They protect their family from danger, all kinds of danger. And they protect their family from themselves. Jesus said that evil, we're not harmed by the evil on the outside. I don't think that means that we should never be concerned about that, but it's what is from within that defiles us, what's in our hearts. And sometimes that might mean we have to have a hard conversation when we see an evil heart within. It's hard to discern. And we can't directly see our children's hearts. We can only see the fruit with the help of the Holy Spirit. And as we see that fruit, we can discern. But let's try our best to aim for helping our children to have hearts that are where they ought to be. It's a lot harder than trying to teach actions, and I certainly need to grow in that. Courageous dads teach their families. They teach them skills, everyday life skills. They teach them values. That's a harder, more nebulous thing to teach. And I think most of our teaching of values comes from teaching by example. We can say all the words in the world about what's important to us, but if our lives don't line up for it, you might as well forget it. Our values got to be in the right place, and we got to be living them, or it's not going to help much. Courageous dads teach their children love. And again, this is going to come from a life that understands our Father's love for us, and that flows out to our families. And we as dads, most of us tend to be not as emotional. We have a harder time with that probably than our wives do. Courageous dads give good things to their children. Jesus said in Matthew 7, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened. Or what man is there among you when his son asks for a loaf, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, he will not give him a snake, will he? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give what is good to those who ask him?" Are we giving good gifts to our children? Or giving them a good picture of a good God. Courageous dads earn the respect of their families. It's by being respectable. Courageous dads take time to listen. It's not just about what we say, but it's often how well we listen. And many men have a tendency to, we're wired to fix things. And we listen long enough to figure out what the problem is, and we jump straight to the solution. But if we're fixing things before our family feels heard, not really fixing it. Even if we are doing the right actions, got to feel heard first. It's hard. Courageous dads engage in conflict. Not destructive conflict, not rage and anger conflict. Not a one-sided monologue. We got to face disagreements. And sometimes have difficult, uncomfortable conversations. My tendency is when I see a disagreement, I just run. Because it's easier to not have the disagreement. We have to work through it, or we're never going to get to the other side of it. So we talked about what is courage. What is not courage? The opposite of courage. Cowardice, maybe? Avoiding conflict. Ruling with a rod of iron. Demanding respect, but not being respectable. Driving from behind. Demanding perfection. I think there's a key difference between excellence and perfection. God calls us up to excellence. Perfection is never satisfied because your family will never be perfect. Cowardice is abdicating our role. God has put us in a spot not to demand respect, not to rule with a rod of iron, but to lead with love. And it's a whole lot easier to just become passive and kind of give up because it's hard. Just being passive. I don't care. Whatever you want. It's not where we're supposed to be. Cowardice is living in defeat. Very obviously, we all fail. But God calls us to a life of victory, not a life of defeat. So today you have a choice. You're going to be courageous and brave. And it's not the kind of courageous and brave where you come back and get a medal after the war. It's just day to day, doing the right thing. A lot of times no one's ever going to notice. Someday, your son's going to look back and say, the best day of my life, went fishing with Dad. You don't know when that day is going to be or which day it's going to be. Keeping on. Or you can be passive and fearful, afraid to do the right thing. Too lazy to step out and do what you should be doing. What are you going to do? You're going to have that choice today, and tomorrow, and the next day. As humans tend to have this, we get excited and encouraged. We hear a good sermon, whatever, and we get on a high horse, and for a week we're doing it well. But this is a long game. 150 years from now, the decisions you're making today are going to make a difference. What are you going to do? I'd like to close with a little word to maybe those who are fatherless, whether literally or just have had an absent dad. Those of you for whom Father's Day is hard. You don't have a dad or a husband that's inspiring. Maybe he's no longer living. Maybe he walked out of your life. Or maybe he was there but just wasn't a courageous dad. It's hard things to face. Maybe he never learned how to be a courageous dad. Maybe he didn't have an example. Maybe you don't have an example. Maybe he wasn't there for you like he should have been. If that's you, after the service, meet back in the back left corner, and we want to just have a little time of hearing from God, hearing from what you should have heard from your father. It doesn't matter if you're old or young. If that's you, let's do that. And then I also like to have a few dads who did have a godly dad that they could appreciate, meet back there too. And we're just going to have speak some words of life that some of your dads didn't speak to you for whatever reason it might be. So I'll give you a little more details afterwards, but let's do that. Let's be an encouragement to each other. Thank you.
No, number 36.